You're listening to Nuts Alive from Asteroid G, now part of Luther Corporation. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein. With me, as always, is...
Hey, your buddy, Mike the Ghoul. Gonna talk some horror of a movie, perhaps?
Oh my god, and the whole fucking franchise that goes with it. We are going to be discussing Aquaman 2, but also just the DCEU, because, I mean, the MCU is not exactly in a great place right now, let's be honest about this. But my god, how did DC let it get this bad for themselves that the last movie they put out in their franchise is Aquaman 2, which is a wretched piece of shit, and we're just supposed to accept that somehow they're going to be able to make better movies after this?
I mean, I thought they had some promise with the Batman. I thought Robert Pattinson did a great job. So Jason Momoa as Aquaman, like, it's okay. Sure, like, sure. I'm on board.
I liked it in the first movie. It was okay.
Yeah. But this was just, it just wasn't bad. Good. It's, you know, like, some of the effects were pretty good. Yeah. You know, there was definitely a budget there. There was some stuff that was cool to look at. The story was weak. The acting was fine. It was just bad, right? Yeah.
Well, it's like, Jason Momoa showed up and wasn't really playing Aquaman. He was playing Jason Momoa, which is fine, because that's all he really did for the first one. But it worked better in the first one, because the person he was playing off of, Amber Heard, who played Mera, like, actually managed to develop good chemistry with him and act like a real person, and they decided because she divorced Johnny Depp, she wasn't really allowed to be in the sequel, I guess?
Right? That was weird, right? Like, I feel like, I knew that the whole thing with her and Johnny Depp was taking place around the same time, and, like, I was curious what it would look like with her in the movie, and she just really wasn't in it.
She wasn't.
You know, she felt like a conscious decision.
She shows up in the early scenes and actually is quite enjoyable for where she's at, and then they just kind of cut her out of the movie, and you're like, oh, wow, way to just be a dick about it, guys.
You know, one big laser blast from Manta, and suddenly we don't see her till Act 3.
Yeah, like, right? Okay. And it wasn't even a laser blast that really affected her. It was mostly the queen that got hit by it. But no, she has to be in the hospital, and she can't come and play with the rest of the guys until the last act. And you're like, but I liked her character.
It was, you know, as a person, take it or leave it. But like you just said, she played a good character in the first one. I bought the relationship. I bought the dynamic.
Yeah.
I thought they did really well together. And you know, there were moments in this movie between the brothers that were kind of okay.
Okay.
It, you know, it was okay. Like, I think they both had some fun, and you could tell there were moments where they were having fun together. But again, that doesn't really make for a good movie.
They didn't have the same chemistry, and I didn't feel like the movie really knew what to do with Orm. The same way that it knew what to do with Amber Heard in the first movie. There wasn't that need. Like, I don't feel the need for them to be good brothers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part of the movie that it failed to sell. Is like, oh yeah, sure, they can joke and whatever, but this is a forced relationship that doesn't work. And you could have spent this time trying to make these two be good together on the villain at all.
He was weak, you know. I guess, you know, the revenge factor. Yeah, like, it was fine. You know, the story of, you know, you killed my father, I'm gonna come for you. You know,
Inigo Montoya. Right.
You killed my father. Prepare to die.
I would have liked that better.
Yeah, in a very calculated, long way of, you know, polluting the planet in some, you know,
oh my god,
try to attempt at, like, some kind of a message. Which, I mean, it's important to talk about climate change, sure, but what was this movie? Was it an action brother fun time, or was it a political statement about having to do something about what we're doing to the world? Like, I can't tell.
Well, and also, if you're going to complain in the movie that, oh my god, the greenhouse gases seem to be going up and the global temperatures are rising, we have no idea how this is happening, are you really unable to go look at the giant mountain spewing out clouds of green gas in the middle of the ocean? Like, I recognize we're supposed to accept a certain amount of magic in here. Like, the mascara is in an island you can't see, but they clearly show a cloaking device for that island. There's no fucking cloaking device on this giant mountain spewing green gas. We have satellites. They take pictures of the entire world all the time. Are you seriously telling me no one's going to notice Black Manta's mining operation spewing out gas? Really?
And what got me too is there was a line as, like, Nicole Kidman in the, you know, the War Council, I guess, Dolph Lundgren, I almost didn't even recognize you, that you were in this movie, but you know, they're talking about like how he's been doing this for months and this was the last place and like we're just finding out about this now.
Right.
Like, did we not have any concern about why the 11 other facilities were raided?
And well, nobody... I mean, in fairness, they don't have satellites. They're the water planet. So like,
yeah, true. But I mean, I guess they also don't send a seahorse every now and again to kind of fill people on what's going on.
Fucking, there was more buddy cop chemistry between Jason Momoa and the CGI octopus than there was him and Orm. And you know, you are correct.
The best person in the movie was the octopus, right, by far.
Right. Now, if he'd also been played by Willem Dafoe, who was in the first...
Oh, I know, right? Now we're talking.
But no, like... you are correct. I don't understand what the point of this movie was. Because in one part, it's like, let's just do the first movie all over again. Right. And in another part, it's like, let's tie up this Black Manta storyline that no one was asking for, because... no one gives a shit. And at the same time, it's also, oh, let's see him being a dad. And it can't commit to any of them whatsoever.
There was a good interaction in the beginning between Jason Momoa getting peed on and kind of listening to his, you know, his single dad about, like, you know, how to be a father. Like, that was a cool little moment.
Yeah.
But that was all you got.
Yeah.
Of any kind of dynamic there.
They forget about that character. They forget about the kid until it's vital for the plot.
Yeah,
2 hours later.
Conveniently, you know, plot hole of, you know, he's just babysitting for who knows how long, and then all of a sudden, like, show up at the lighthouse and kill.
Yeah, right. Like, you knew where I lived? Because I haven't been here, like, all movie, dude. Like, yeah, what are you talking about?
It was a lot of tropes that have been done before that just, it's not even like a factor of not feeling fresh, right? Like, if you do something that's been done before and you do it well, like, it's fine. It's a fun movie. It's an action movie. Yeah. It is for what it is. What do you think Godzilla is? You go there for a reason, and it's not the interaction between the humans. You go to see the giant monster.
Oh,
you go to this movie to see the action and the banter and, like, you know, the funny, and it tried, but then it took itself really serious at times, and it's just a weird movie.
It was such a weird movie. I mean, we could spend an entire podcast talking about the fact that Hollywood, for some reason, seems to think we need to care about the humans in a Godzilla movie, which we don't.
Yeah, but... Bryan Cranston couldn't save that, man, and he's a great actor. Come on, I don't care. Show me the monster.
I liked his 40 minutes of his movie, and then he was gone, and I suddenly no longer cared about anything.
But
it is that thing of... I don't know that they knew what they wanted to do with this movie. It was pretty clear that it suffered through several versions of rewrites and refilmings and reshoots and a lot of executive meddling for them to be like, we know this franchise is ending and we're not going to have Aquaman back, but what if we could save it and have Aquaman back? And
successful movie, I guess, if you look at the dollars, you know, 434 million, my words. Fine. I mean, I guess it made money, but I mean, it's hard these days to have a movie that has any kind of pull, like whether it be DC or Marvel, and not have it be a wretched piece of shit that doesn't make money in some form. Am I right? Like, it's gonna make money just based off of what it is.
Unless it's the Marvels. I mean, it is true that people are getting tired of superhero movies, but it's not that they're getting tired of superheroes. I mean, let's be clear. Spider-Man made all the money ever when it came out with its third film. Guardians of the Galaxy made only slightly less in its third volume than it did in its second volume, and that was still a shit ton of money for Marvel at the time.
Right.
And it's because people liked the story and they liked the characters. People aren't tired of superhero movies, they're tired of bad superhero movies. And all Marvel and DC has really shit out for the most part has been bad ones. Every time a good one comes out, everyone flocks and shows up. But like most of them, I happen to actually like the Marvels, but at the same time, I actually think that Marvel overestimated what the expectation was of that movie. Like, if you look at why Captain Marvel was a success, I don't think it was because of Captain Marvel. I think it was because it came sandwiched in between two Avengers movies.
Yeah.
Like, she's a boring character, and the thing people praise about that movie was, oh, it's a female superhero, this is great, we haven't had one of these. Then we had a bunch of female superhero movies, and now everyone's like, wait, why do we care about Captain Marvel again? And it's only because she was in between two Avengers movies, and people were desperate to find out what was going to happen in Endgame. Anything you put there was going to make money. Ant-Man 2 made $200 million more than Ant-Man 1, and that was only because it came sandwiched between two Avengers movies. Like, you look at it and you sit there going, I don't think it made money for any reason other than it was between these two films, and I think you expecting the second Captain Marvel to make $1 billion when it's not even as good of a movie as the first one is way overestimating. Like, you overplayed your hand there, Marvel.
Yeah, and it's a strange thing because, like, as just like, you know, normal Joes, you and me, who are sitting here talking about it, you can deduce pretty simply that when you come to the end of a conclusion of a major story like Endgame, with this 10 years of buildup of all these movies leading to this one point, that there's, how do you not see as an executive doing these things that there's going to be slight burnout on your audience after going on this journey for you for years? And now you're shitting out content at a much faster pace, which, you know, is difficult to absorb all at one time. You know, there's a billion shows, a dozen movies, you know, everything is changing and coming so fast. You don't give people time to appreciate the consequence of what they're watching.
It's true. No, the first 10 years of Marvel produced 20-ish movies, 22, I think, maybe, total. That's, like, 2 hours a movie, more or less, give or take, you know? And then the next phase alone of Marvel, which took a year and a half to do, produced another 22 works. And we're not talking, like, movies. We're talking movies and shows. More hours in Phase 4 than in all three of the previous phases combined. And you're just like, what are you doing? And that makes the entire superhero movie industry suffer, because Marvel oversaturated so much they didn't just sink themselves, they sank most of DC's work, which, in fairness, if anyone was going to get punished, it was DC, because their movies have been ass.
Just not good.
Like, I can count on one hand the number of DC movies I've actually liked in the past, like, entirety of their time making movies.
Yeah, and it would not surprise me if 4 out of 5 of them are Batman movies.
Right? Yeah.
Which, I mean, you do one thing really well, DC, and you did a good job selling Robert Pattinson. I didn't believe that Edward Sparkle team was going to be able to pull off Bruce Wayne, but that version of Bruce Wayne I bought as what he was. He was a little broody.
Oh my god, he was a lot broody.
He was a lot broody. I bought that this character could exist in this environment for what this Gotham was. I thought the most intriguing character of that movie was the city.
I gotta say, I could have done with Batman being slightly happier in that movie.
And that's fair. Completely fair.
I understand that he's in a dark place in that movie. His parents are dead. He's basically just been him and his butler the whole time. His butler almost dies in this movie. And there's nothing, it's not like he has a ward to take care of or anything. It's just him and the darkness of Gotham. And don't get me wrong, they sold the shit out of that. Doesn't make it a movie I necessarily want to kick back and enjoy, because I'm not sitting there going, man, let's go see Edward Sparkleteen with a bowl of popcorn and watch him slowly, brutally kill himself and everyone else in the city in a suicide pact. I'm struggling with this. Like, all the ideas in that movie were great. I could have done with just, like, a tiny skosh more humor or something to make it be like, you know what, this is actually here for me to be enjoying this instead of just being punished the whole time. Which
I get it.
Yeah, I also felt that way about Joker, though. Like, oh my god, Joker is just a brutally depressing movie.
I gotta really watch that. Like, I tried to get through, and we talked about this, the first, like, 30 minutes or so, and it just didn't grab me, and I'm trying to, like, is it me? Because, like, this won an Academy Award. Like, he did really well as an actor.
He did.
I like Joaquin Phoenix, but, like, the story just didn't grab me. Yeah. And I'll give it another shot because I know we'll want to talk about it at some time. But I don't get the hype is what I'm trying to get at. People loved it, but it didn't grab me.
Well, I think the issue for me is that Joker in that movie, as he should be, is unrepentant. But the movie is unrepentant about Joker. So there's no, like, moral of the story. There's no, like, people being afraid of him, high ground kind of thing. Like, the people in the studio audience when he kills someone in front of them, yeah, they're afraid. But most of the city rallies around him in some sort of, like, MRA, Charlottesville kind of, like, riot. And it feels like the film glorifies that. And the fact that he's getting a sequel where he falls in love with Harley Quinn and the two get to do, like, jukebox musicals, I'm like, you don't really understand this character, do you?
He's very much, like, I think you've gotten some different iterations of Jokers, and we should do a talk about, you know, the different Jokers at one time. There's some really cool stuff to talk about there. But, like, he, I'm going to give it a watch, and I can't give too much opinion on it because I've only seen what I've seen in little snippets. But I feel like you're right. Like, it felt kind of weird in the previews even to see, like you said, the city rallying around this guy who's supposed to be, like, this agent of chaos and anarchy that, like, is here to disrupt. But yet everybody's rallying around him like it's for a cause. It just seemed kind of different. And I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to see, like, how it feels. But it just seemed like a movie that it was a different breed of anti-hero, superhero, villain movie, and maybe that's a good thing, but something about it just seems off, and maybe I'll just give it another shot and see, but I don't know, it just feels weird.
Like, if the movie is supposed to be about Joker living in a city that deserves to burn,
mm-hmm.
I guess kinda, but it doesn't feel like it's based in a real basis of reality. Everyone's so shitty there, like, it doesn't even feel like the Gotham we know is supposed to exist. It's just mm-hmm. awful. Anyway.
It takes a lot to convey something in a movie that's, you know, not a character or can't, like, speak for themselves, like a city, as, you know, something that's intriguing and you want to know more about. And uh-huh. I got that in the Robert Pattinson Batman, but I haven't felt that for, like, something in a lot of other places. Maybe Game of Thrones, the way they made Westeros and the world look. It was very an intriguing world, and it wasn't just the characters that were something. There was something about where they lived and the towns they were in and the castles and all that kind of grabbed you. Like, there's story there. It makes them who they are. And you kind of felt that with that version of Batman, and I guess they were maybe trying to convey that with, like you said, the Joker in this version of Gotham, and we'll see. But, like, back to the topic at hand, Aquaman sucked.
Well, yeah, and here's you mentioned Game of Thrones and Westeros, and that's actually something I wanted to touch upon, is the whole super oversaturation of superheroes, which has definitely punished DC as much as it's punished Marvel. Because if you look at it, that whole idea of too big to fail, the Avengers movies had to be successful because Marvel was so successful in the lead up to them. And that was, to use TV terminology, because sometimes Marvel even likes to call their TV their movies like a long-running TV show. They equate it to that. Sure. Like, the Avengers was essentially your series finale, not just season finale. What comes afterwards is almost like a spin-off reboot trying to do something new. But, like, mm-hmm. 20 movies leading up to one grand finale, and most of your characters die at that point, or retire, or both. That's a series finale. That's what that is right there. It was too big to fail, and thankfully, for the most part, they succeeded. There are parts of it that aren't great, like the big women do it together rally thing that even the boys felt the need to make fun of because it was worthy of being made fun of. But too big to fail. That movie did what it needed to do. It got in, it got out. If it had been the last Marvel movie of the MCU we ever saw, people would be praising it to this day.
I don't think we'd be disappointed, right? I think we'd be okay with that. Because, like you said, it was the finale of a buildup of story of 10 years of something that you were along for the ride. That ends, there's consequence, characters die, characters retire, characters move on, and then you try to force feed this whole other, you know, universe of what's going on. And hey, look what they did after the fact. There's more story here. Hey, let me shove down your throat of these people having a family and what goes on there. Like, I just got so attached to what was going on with Thanos. You want me to take on this new threat and understand what's going on when there is no threat that can compare to what
No threat that can compare. Not after you've already done it once. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's the too big to fail. When you look at Game of Thrones, there was so much buildup, so many hours, so much that went into building those characters up for people that it became too big to fail. It was going to have the most successful series finale, ratings-wise, of any series finale. But it also was the thing of, because everyone was focused and everyone was going to tune in, and there was no way anyone was going to miss that. No way. Whatsoever. That, because it was a disappointment, unlike Endgame, we're still talking about it to this day as one of the worst finales ever known. And who's really excited about House of the Dragon? I watched the first season. It was fine. But it's not like anyone's sitting there going, yeah, we need more Game of Thrones after that disappointment.
I tried to watch House of Dragon, and it was okay. It was fine. And you know, I think the Targaryen story is interesting, fine. But again, like, Game of Thrones got you right off episode one.
Uh-huh.
pretty much when and everything. And then they get you at the end of season one when they kill Ned, spoiler alert. Which, and you're like, what Sean the Bean. Fuck is going die. On? Yeah. You knew he was gonna, but you thought maybe. You know? You thought maybe, like, they're not gonna kill off Sean Bean. He's a major actor. Oh,
but he always
God.
Dies.
He does. He plays that role in a lot of films and stuff. He plays that like villain slash hero guy that dies.
Always dies. I mean, I thought that was brilliant casting. It's like they just lampshaded it, going, you know he's gonna die, right? I mean, and everyone's like, oh my God, I couldn't believe he died. You're sitting there going, but it's Sean Bean. Like, I think he signed on because he knew he was gonna die.
It's almost like it's true. He's like, you know, I could go in for 8 episodes, collect a paycheck on something I'm getting royalties off because they're gonna love my character forever. Like, sign me up for that. Another great, as we call on this podcast, with business decision made by somebody.
Well, and who comes out of all of Game of Thrones smelling like roses? Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy
with him. He was there when it mattered. Yeah. Even, you know, poor Jon Snow couldn't survive the absolute abortion that was, you know, that finale. And I've seen some bad ones. Like, you know, the Sopranos finale, take it for what you will at the time, you know, was terrible as well. It was ambiguous and it was fine. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I look at that right now in the later years much fonder than I look at anything Game of Thrones crapped out in season 8. Like, it just realistically.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that we're way off topic, but I can't help but discuss this because we've raised this at this point. Why is Jon Snow sent to the wall exactly? His sister is Queen of the North. Mm-hmm. She took the country out of it, out of them. So there's no North for them to send him to. There's no force of will they can make that says, you've got to go to the wall, Jon. He could just walk back to the border of the southern border of the North, which is such a terrible name, and be like, I'm king again, and who's going to stop him? Even his sister wouldn't. They're all like, well, you're king. Just be king. And again, you know, the thing is, he's a baller. He could have just wandered into the North, taken both of his sisters as his concubine wives and wandered off, because technically they weren't that related to him at that point. Yeah. So, he could have done whatever the fuck you want. I killed a queen. Let's kill two more. What are you going to do to me? I run the fucking North. But no.
He could have went full Theon Greyjoy and it would have worked out just fine.
And then he fucking walks to the North like a sad sack and goes hangs out with the wildlings, which clearly he wanted to do anyway, but he could have done it on his fucking terms, okay?
Yeah.
That whole ending was... Anyway. Aquaman. It was bad. Aquaman. So...
Decent effects. Movie was there.
Yes. But it's a bad finale. Like, they knew going into this, before they even finished filming it, that this was going to be the last movie of the DCEU, that after this, James Gunn was effectively rebooting everything. He was taking the pillow and smothering the universe and pulling it away and then looking over at Peacemaker and going, but you're still cool, bro. So, like, we knew he was going into this. Like, everyone knew this was ending. They couldn't even reboot it with The Flash. And then they had 6 months, and they could have taken more if they really wanted to, and been like, let's wait a little bit and let's do Aquaman right. But instead they rushed out this piece of shit with a non-ending to their non-universe. And they're like, yay, victory lap! And no one cared. Yay?
It was a strange feeling watching this movie, knowing, like you said, this is the end of whatever this era of DC is. And the crawl in the beginning where it shows each of the heroes, and I'm like, well, we're never going to see them again. We're never going to see that. It's going to be different here. Ben Affleck's gone. Yep. You know, Henry Cavill's gone. Yep. Gal Gadot's gone. Like, this is going to be all different. And maybe that'll be fine. And maybe we'll finally get some DC. Like, maybe they take over a little bit and they can run the show in superhero movies for the next 10 years like Marvel did, you know, putting... you know, DC in their place for the last decade plus.
Yep.
But I don't have high hopes either way
that
either universe is going to give us what we want as fans. I think they just want to give us what makes them money. And because of the way things are right now with people just, you know, absorbing all the media they can, like, it's going to make money either way. And it's slightly disappointing because you're going to get a subpar product more often than not.
I think James Gunn, if he's allowed to just make the movies and the people above him don't executive meddle, and that's going to be the question right there.
That's going to be a key.
That's going to be the key. I think James Gunn can make a good movie out of it. Like, I think he has a very specific vision for Superman. I'm interested in seeing it. I think just slapping Batman's name on a film is automatically going to get people to show up, because there hasn't been a really bad one since the Joel Schumacher era.
Right. Yeah. Batnipples and such.
Yeah. Like, he's a consistent name. People are going to accept it. They're going to know that it's a Batman movie. Even if it says it's The Brave and the Bold, it's going to have Batman and Robin on the poster. Sure. I'll show up for Batman. It's fine. I'll show up for Superman. It's fine. Like, mm-hmm. they'll make money. But there's a bunch of other ones in there that are questionable. Like, will people show up for Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow? I know I will. Right. Yeah. I don't know that anyone else is gonna, but I know I will. So, I mean, but I'm a nerd, and I'll show up for fucking everything. Like, shit. I've been excited for a year because they're making another Planet of the Apes movies, and I'm like, how many people besides me care that deeply about Planet of the Apes? Like, they're good movies.
I'm excited for it. Like, I
appreciate
I
that. Thank you.
Amazing job. I want to buy, I'll buy into anything Caesar does. I'm in. Like, hell yeah. Great movies hell, there.
And in fact, you know what? Let's just say, Disney, get rid of Marvel. Let's let them retire. Let's do a 10-year Planet of the Apes cinematic universe. I'm on board for this, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, give us the next 10 years of Planet of the Apes and Good Godzilla, yes. And let's call it a win, right?
Yes.
Like, come
yes.
on. Give us something different.
New.
Spoon-fed
something
us
new.
And
yeah.
You've opened the car, Jack, and shoved these donuts of mediocrity down our throat for the last couple years. Give mm-hmm. us something good. Please.
Something new. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, I don't know that I have much more to say about DC at this point. I just really wanted to bitch about Aquaman because it was so bad.
It was. And like
so
I said,
bad.
Some good effects, you yep. know, some decent buddy-buddy moments here mm-hmm. and there. The story overall, extremely weak. The casting, questionable with where they had people in the writing and whatnot. Amber Heard, where are you? It was just weird. Overall, I mean, you know, C-minus movie, I think.
At best.
And that's being a little generous, I think. Yeah. But it was not a very good swan song for what was supposed to be the ending of whatever that era was.
Yeah. Oh, well. This has
c'est
been...
la vie.
Yeah, c'est la vie. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G. Looking forward to our reboot by James Gunn. I'm... I don't know what we're going to call ourselves. The the return of Asteroid G. Ooh.
The son of Asteroid G.
Asteroid G versus Godzilla.
Let's bring it on.
Yes! I'm Mike Finkelstein.
And I'm Mike the Ghoul, hanging with my buddy and saying goodbye, everyone.
We will see you all next time. Yeah, I noticed that my audio on the previous podcast was really peaked out,
mm-hmm.
Which probably means that the next two podcasts are also going to be peaked out because we recorded a couple after them.
And
I had to use like the graphic equalizer to like cut out the entire top end because thankfully your voice is lower than mine is, as was like Jay Shidel to Nose Lotus. So I cut out the top three of like a 30 band graphic equalizer. And it was fine, but because mine was cracked and awful until I did that, and then it was actually palatable to listen to myself talk, which, you know, is the goal in a podcast, is to have people, you know, want to
listen
to
important.
It.
Yeah, kind of important.
Yeah, thing, yeah.
Seems like a thing that's important.
It's a thing, yeah, you would think. Okay, anyway.